Welcome to Crime on Caffeine. I'm your host, Erica.
And I'm your host, Allison. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode today. Funny story. We be sipping on the same coffee because we decided to go to the same place for breakfast, but like
in different states.
Completely different states. Me and Erica were texting on Sunday and we were like, oh, I'm at First Watch. And she's like, oh, I'm at First Watch. And I said, this is silly. And fun fact, they have coffee that you can buy. So here we are.
Guys, First Watch. So I'm, you know, when you go out for breakfast and they just give you like the little like hot coffee and it's just super basic and it's the same everywhere. It's usually like Folgers or something. Mm-hmm. First Watch is the only place where I literally will eat that shit up. It is so good. If you've had their iced coffee, if you know, you fucking know. They have the best coffee. So we got their Project Sunrise. It's the coffee that they use for everything. I know they use Monin syrups for their iced coffee, but they use Project Sunrise. You can get it online or you can get it at the restaurant. But yeah, I love First Watch. They have them everywhere. And I took Nate there for the first time. I got the Floridian French toast. What'd you get, Allison?
Oh, so mine has a fall menu now. So they had this like,
oh, yeah.
I forget what it's called. It's a egg sandwich. Oh, actually, it was called the Pretzel Royale.
Oh,
and it was a breakfast sandwich, but on a pretzel bun.
They did not have that in Wisconsin. They had pumpkin pancake breakfast, which I was torn, but
I almost got that, but I also almost got the churros as well. But I figured
churros.
Yeah, they have cinnamon spice churros.
Girl, we had different menus.
Fly to Florida so you can have the churros and the pretzel bun sandwich. It was so good.
Ugh. It just takes me back to hungover Sundays at First Watch with my friends. We would sit around the big round tables and it would be like a cleanse of all of our sins from the night before.
I love and that.
Also, this weekend, I got my first pumpkin cream cold brew of the season. I don't know what the hell it's called. Whatever. The pumpkin drink with the pumpkin cold sweet cream cold foam.
I have fully transitioned, so I can't say I've had my first, but I have had a few.
I'm ready. I'm happy.
Even Max, on Saturday, I think it was, he had a little bit to drink, but he did say he was feeling that it was a little bit spooky season.
Ooh.
And that's pretty early for him to be saying that. So,
oh, yeah.
Once my candle in my living room burns out, I'm transitioning.
Oh, yeah. I need to switch out I don't think I have any fall candles.
Yeah. I'll send you pictures of the ones I have. I have three of them. And I was just at Home Goods and almost bought more, but I held back. Everything's fine.
Guys, did you know that? No, I don't know how you would know this, but Allison bought me my favorite candle that I've ever owned in my entire life. And I've since burned the entire thing. It is gone, but I don't even like remember what it was called. It was the best candle that I've ever.
Something. Bergamot.
It was something else. But
Bergamot,
yeah.
Number 7 or something. I don't forget. It was in like a gold container.
It was amazing. So I trust her with my life when it comes to candles.
I like the smelly goods.
Sorry, I do
if you
have
can hear Gus.
He's just really excited for fall.
He's like snorting. Anytime I come in this room to record because I'm turning it into the nursery, he is like an insane human. I also just got him new toys, so he's extra insane.
Gus is getting very jealous of the new BB.
He's
not going to have all the attention anymore.
He's doing okay. When I undid like the stroller and everything, he sniffed it. He didn't get inside. He just like inspected it all.
Said this for me?
He was like, not sure what this is, but no, it's not mine. So I'm not really sure where he's at with that.
Good job, Gussington.
He's all right.
Enough about us, as much as I know you guys love to hear about our lives. I do have a few long-awaited true crime updates. One is actually breaking news today. which was really disappointing because, you know, I thought he was one of the good ones, but at the same time, I know there's a lot going on over there. This was just released a couple hours ago. Unfortunately, Colby Ryan, who was Lori's son from her marriage to Joseph Ryan, he was arrested on sexual assault charges. He and his wife are separated, and he raped her in, I think he was like visiting her home. He like went there to like watch TV or something, and then he like admitted to doing it while they were talking, and she like recorded it. So he was arrested, and he was charged on 2 counts of sexual assault. He was arrested on Saturday. Not that much more detail other than that. I know there's some things going on in the trial, though, that I did want to talk about. I want to say on August 16th, there were some pictures of Lori on her way to the courthouse, leaving the courthouse, in the courthouse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you have not seen these yet, I highly recommend looking them up because it is literally like she looked happier to be there than the entire cast of Don't Worry, Darling at the Venice Film Festival did the other night. It's like chilling to see these photos of her. And the way that she is like dressed to the nines with her hair done, she is literally walking in and out of the courtroom, like smiling, posing for the cameras. And then the most disturbing thing is the photos that they capture of her inside the courtroom, sitting there smiling, laughing, like literally having the time of her life. There's not really a lot of movement right now because there are 2 separate conspiracy charges, obviously, for each child, and they are trying to fight on this because they believe that these issues shouldn't be charged together. So Lori's team is fighting for the 2 to be charged separately. I'm sure they're hoping that like they could get off on one of the charges if that's the case. Right now that they are saying that JJ's remains were buried in a pet cemetery while Tylee's remains were dismembered and then burned. So obviously as things keep happening, we'll keep you guys in the loop, but I really don't think there's going to be much movement in this case until the start of next year. But if you are interested, I highly recommend going and looking those pictures up because it's just wild to see.
She's insane. I'm sorry. She's been waiting for this moment.
She has been waiting. Like, she was so ready. Like, these pictures are insane to me, guys. I can't. Oh, my God. Like, the way they did their hair, everything. Like, oh, my God. If you didn't know where these were from, you would never think that she was in court on conspiracy of murdering 2 of her children for money. Like, oh, my goodness. I can't.
It just reminds me of, remember what she said to her, like, inmate about, I can't wait to, you know, have my trial. It's going to be on TV.
Literally. Oh, my gosh. She was so insane. If you guys are newer listeners and you haven't heard our first ever episode that we did, it was when we were, like, in the midst of all of this. It was before Lori and Chad Daybell had even been arrested. Highly recommend listening to it because the information is great. While we don't sound the best because it was our first episode we've ever done, the information is there. So go check it out.
No judgment.
No judgment. I'm sure that we will go back to that case in a few years once there's more info. But for now, that's what we have for you. And we can focus on a different case, on a different family. This was like one of the first cases that I ever had on my list when I knew that we were going to do a podcast. And I first heard about this case because of, I think it was like an investigation discovery docuseries something. I like watched it with my friends in Tampa and we were all just like so hooked on what the hell really happened in this case. So I'm excited to talk about it today. I think that the family that of the woman that I'm about to talk about has been through so much in the past 11 years, and it looks like hopefully they're making movements in getting justice, but let's just dive right into it.
Yeah.
So this is the case surrounding the mysterious death of Rebecca Zahau. So Rebecca, also known as Becky to friends and family, was born March 15, 1979. She was a Burmese immigrant, and she was one of six children. She was born in Phalam, which was formerly known as Burma, but it was a small town in Myanmar. And throughout her life, her family moved around and lived in many different countries and traveled all over the place, places like Germany, Nepal, and then eventually ventured over to the United States. She was described by her family and friends as like a health nut, and she worked as an ophthalmic technician until 2010. She lived like a very healthy lifestyle. She didn't really drink alcohol. She was always trying to like eat healthy and motivate others to kind of like live healthy lifestyle as well. She just had like a lot of other interests outside of her work too. She spoke several different languages that she learned during her time living and venturing in other countries. She was also a very religious Christian who loved going to church. Her siblings described her as being funny and kind and warm. And when she was working, she would support her parents financially, and she took very good care of them. And her siblings referred to her as kind of like the glue of their family. And when Rebecca was still working, she met Jonah Shacknai, who was the founder of Medicis Pharmaceutical Corporation. So they started to date in 2009, and this was at a time while Rebecca's first marriage that she'd ever been in of 8 years to Neil Nalapa was being finalized, and that it was finalized in February of 2011. So she dated Jonah for like the first 2 years while she was like still married to this guy. Then the divorce was finalized, whatever. Still kept dating, and Jonah Shacknai had three children from previous marriages. So two of them were already teenagers from his first marriage, and then from his second marriage, he had a six-year-old son named Max. So I think the teenagers were living with the mom from the first marriage, and he just cared for Max. And so around this time is when Rebecca quit her job so that she would be able to spend more time with Jonah and his family. And she played a huge role in caring for Max. She was really, really close with him, and she would take him to like soccer practices. She would make him meals. He would want her to like read to him before bed, things like that. Like, she was just very much a parental figure in his life, even though she obviously wasn't his mom. And Rebecca was super helpful. Like, obviously, she literally quit her job so that she could spend more time with this dude's family. So definitely had like a very caretaker vibe, the way that she cared for her family and now was caring for like somebody else's family. She just, I mean, she was also working in medicine, so she very much was just like a nurturing, caring person, I feel like. So that summer, she lived with the Shacknai family in their mansion in Coronado, California. On July 11th of 2011, Rebecca was at the house looking after both Max and her little sister, Zena, who was, I think, like 13 years old at the time. And so Rebecca was in a downstairs bathroom, like getting ready for the day, and then Zena was showering in another bathroom, and all of a sudden Rebecca hears a crash. And she looks out to find Max at the bottom of the stairs, and she calls 911 immediately. So there's a lot of speculation over what happened to this kid. It was ruled an accidental death, but there are a lot of people out there who think that maybe there could have been more to the story here. And you can look through the coroner's reports, the police reports, the autopsy, everything. And it ultimately looks as though he was trying to do some sort of like X Games mode going down the banister of the stairs. Tried to grab onto the chandelier and like didn't work and ended up falling. And he was in the hospital for 5 days. And then on the 16th of July, he ended up passing from brain damage.
Aww.
We'll jump back into this. I kind of want to stay like in the timeline, but for now, the chandelier was on the floor next to him, so it was assumed that he, you know, tried to grab it while coming down the stairs, or like he was like sliding down the railing, something like that. Just obviously something that, like, if he was being supervised, probably wouldn't have happened type of thing. So, so tragic. Like I said, there are people out there who believe that, you know, this should be looked into more, including Max's mother, who thinks something here was wrong. I'm not going to get into that because this case is solely about Rebecca, and I just don't feel like sitting here and, like, debating a child's death. So during the week, while Max was, like, still in the hospital, Jonah's brother, Adam, came to stay at the mansion's guest house. So obviously, while Max was in the hospital, Jonah was trying to stay at the hospital as much as he could. He really, like, wasn't at the mansion. So this night, the next night when Rebecca went to sleep, she and Adam were the only people on the property. Like I said, he was staying in the guest house. He wasn't staying in, like, the main area of the mansion. But on July 13th, he wakes up at 6:30 a.m. and calls 911 to report a nude woman hanging from the second-story balcony of the main house. Her hands and feet had been bound, and he made the call after he cut her down.
What? Which,
rule number one, if there is a literal soon-to-be crime scene, do not touch anyone or anything, especially if you weren't involved. Why are we touching anything? Why did you cut her down? As if the fucking fire department, EMTs, police don't have the resources to be able to do that. Why did you do that? That's my number one red flag right there.
Yeah.
Right there.
I don't understand what was going on.
So medics arrive on scene and she's pronounced dead. The other red flag is the knife that he used to cut her down, none of his DNA was found on it, only hers. So that's really sketchy. Had you used the knife to cut her down and your DNA isn't there? So some other weird things about the crime scene. There was a message in black paint on Rebecca's bedroom. Oh, I don't know if I mentioned this, but if you couldn't tell, the nude woman that was hanging from the balcony was Rebecca.
I don't think you did.
Yeah, okay, sorry. It was Rebecca. Oh, surprise. There was a message in black paint on her bedroom door that read, "She saved him. Can you save her?"
That is
cryptic.
Suspicious.
We'll get to it in a second. But at the time of the incident, like I said, Jonah wasn't home. He'd been staying at the hospital while Max was still unconscious. So, like, there's no way that he had anything to do with this. And so this happened July 13th, right? They did not come out with the cause of death until September 2nd, the day that she was buried. So they ruled her death a suicide.
I don't think it was.
And that's what everyone who knew Rebecca said. They confirmed that she seemed totally fine in the days leading up to her death. Like, she had all these things planned. She'd been on the phone talking to her siblings and her parents about the things that she was planning on doing that had to do with them. Like, she said she was going to call them on this future day, XYZ, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, it just wouldn't make sense that she was planning suicide but had all these plans for after that day. Like, yeah. What? No. People who are planning suicide don't have plans. The family also noted a huge thing for me here is that suicide was very, very much against their religion, and that because Rebecca was so religious and she, like, agreed with this viewpoint, she would never do this. And even her ex-husband came out and reiterated this point. He was like, she would just never do something like that. It goes against everything that she believed in. And the fact that her ex-husband is, like, coming out to say something like this, like, I definitely take his word for it. I don't know. And then let's just talk about the fact that her legs were tied together and her hands were tied behind her back. Why would you make it so difficult for yourself? And like tying your own hands behind your back?
It's hard.
How the fuck are you going to do that and then kill yourself? And the biggest one for me is that she was nude. No one in their right mind is going to want their nude body like that on display in such like a – I just don't see how any of this adds up. She would not commit suicide and be naked for everyone to see, literally hanging from the mansion. Like, what?
Yeah, that makes absolutely no sense.
And then when it comes to the note, the family confirmed this is not Rebecca's handwriting. So she didn't write it herself. People were theorizing maybe like the way it said, "She saved him, can you save her?" was talking about Max. But she technically didn't save him because he didn't live. I don't really know. Maybe she saved Jonah by like helping him out so much. And it's like a threat to Jonah. I have no idea. Super weird. Also, I just want to point out, she was literally taking care of her parents financially. Why would she just leave them and, like, screw them?
I just don't think she would.
Nope, me either. So the family took it upon themselves to, you know, hire an attorney, get a second autopsy performed, and reevaluate everything because they were like, we know in our hearts that this is not a suicide. Obviously, the police are like, yes, it is, but they had to kind of like take matters into their own hands. So the autopsy showed 4 instances of bruising to her head, and the cause of death could have been explained by this head trauma. The attorney that they hired, attorney Keith Greer, filed a wrongful death lawsuit. And then, like I said, they had a second autopsy performed by pathologist Dr. Cyril Recht. He believed that Rebecca's death was caused by manual strangulation and head trauma due to the bruising that they found on her head and also bruising in the form of fingerprints around her neck. They insisted that she had been unconscious when she died due to that strangulation, so that is what caused her death, and then she was hung on display afterwards. Greer and his team also noted that the rope that Rebecca had been bound with was like a ski boat rope, and an expert claimed that the knots were tied nautical maritime knots. I don't know anything about that. But you know who did? Jonah's brother, Adam. So the team that they hired also believed that Rebecca had been SA'd before her death. So this is the timeline. They think that she either rejected someone and then was SA'd, strangled, and then hung to make it look like a suicide, or it was like a hit because of Jonah being so high up in the medical industry and financial and being like a billionaire. You know, he's involved with some weirdos, which we'll talk about in a second. Mm-hmm. We can talk about this right now, actually. He, very soon after the death of Max and Rebecca, he sold the pharmaceutical company for a ton of money to some, I guess, like not so good, sketchy people. So some people theorize that these deaths were because he got involved with like not the right people. And then the other people are here theorizing that the only other person who had been on the property at the time, who cut her down, who had a boat with knowledge of how to tie these knots, Adam Shacknai, was the only person who, it made sense, murdered Rebecca. And that's kind of like the theory that I feel like makes the most sense in my head.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there is no concrete evidence, so a criminal trial is not going to happen. But like I said, they had a civil suit. So it lasted for a month in 2018. So think of how much time the family spent trying to get justice for her, only to have it only come in a civil suit. Greer argued during this trial that Adam attacked Rebecca at the home, staged it to make it look like she'd taken her own life. Rebecca's family ended up winning the civil suit. They were to be awarded with $5 million as well as an additional $167,000 that Rebecca would have provided to the family as financial support had she been alive. So I guess this was not known to Adam at the time that his attorneys were negotiating a settlement, and the family ended up settling with the insurance company for $600,000. I think at the end of the day, the family didn't care about the money because they have still been working tirelessly to have the case reopened. They even have an award out for any information that might help lead to the arrest of Adam Shacknai. They're really hoping to get this guy to have a criminal trial so that they can have justice for Rebecca. And whether or not Adam did it, I really, truly hope that their police department, which – also, I do want to just preface that the Coronado Police Department didn't have like a homicide unit at the time. So the San Diego Police Department had to step in and help them. I just truly hope that they're able to take another look at this case because it's tragic and the family deserves justice and so does Rebecca. But that is where we are now. So we have a ton of theories. I love it. After I'm done like reading all the facts on a case, just going on Reddit and just seeing what people think. And I don't know. I definitely think, obviously, these were very rich men. And with rich men comes the ability to make issues and people go away very easily. And I feel like there's a lot of secrets there that people don't really know about. But just the fact that he was the only person there, the fact that he cut her down, the fact that his DNA was not found on the scene whatsoever, yet we know for a fact that it should have been because he touched the knife. It's just like all the circumstantial evidence in the world is pointing to this man. There is nothing that you can say here that would convince me that this girl committed suicide.
Yeah.
I totally understand the – let's see. It was 2 days since Max had fallen down the stairs. So like extreme guilt maybe, but he wasn't dead yet. So she didn't even like – she died before knowing that Max had died. So if maybe he had died before, I would understand the guilt thing. But I just don't think that guilt would have driven her to do something like that. And then you get to how she was found. It just – none of it adds up. And the way that the police were able to close this case and just try and get everyone to accept that this is what it is just baffling to me. I don't understand how they could sit there and explain to people like, yeah, she tied her hands behind her back, tied her feet together – and hanged herself.
I also don't know how, like, a professional team of police officers would rule that a suicide.
Makes no sense. Especially since, like, it would be one thing if the San Diego police hadn't stepped in to help them and they were, like, they'd never dealt with a matter like this before. They were super inexperienced. I mean, I still don't think that's, like, an excuse, but okay, it would be more understandable. The San Diego Police Department had to come and step in, and they still didn't care. And they're still refusing to take anything back. They're like, we stand by what we said. Like, this is a suicide, blah, blah, blah. And that's...
because they don't want to be wrong.
Well... they don't want to be wrong, or, you know, I just like when billionaires are involved, I just get so sketched out. I get so sketched out when billionaires are involved. Who the fuck knows?
Because maybe they were, I'm not saying they were, but maybe they were paid off. Maybe
you never know, or someone was paid to do something. Who the fuck knows? I don't know, but I want to hear what you guys think. So for those of you who have heard this story before and have theories on it, tell us. If you are just hearing this for the first time, tell us. Go look it up. Go on Reddit. Go on a deep dive like I have so many times. I want to hear what you guys think, and I really want this case to get solved. So I don't know if this is still on the table, but as of August of 2019, the Sahau family was offering a $100,000 reward for any information leading to the arrest and conviction of Adam Shacknai. So if you do have any information, you are to call either the Coronado Police Department, San Diego Police Department. We'll have the info in the episode description, but the number to call 800-366-8529. And that is the case of Rebecca Zahau.
That's insane.
Yeah, you should watch the Investigation Discovery documentary because they like
– I'm gonna.
They reenact the whole thing like with the stairs and everything, so you're able to kind of like see – it was wild. And I'm surprised I don't really hear about this case that often. I feel like – I guess it makes sense because when things are ruled a suicide, it's like, oh, okay, it's solved. It's over. And people just tend to move on. But – clearly is a case where people should not be moving on from.
Yeah, I just don't believe that it was a suicide. But also, I've just never heard this case before. I'm shocked.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Adam guy did it.
Yeah, me too. And if he didn't, he knows who did.
Oh, 100% he knows who did. Maybe he hired somebody to do it, and that's why his DNA isn't on it.
People suspected a hitman too. I don't know. I feel like there would have been some sort of evidence that someone else is on the property in that case. But also, like, if your literal job is to kill people, you're probably pretty good at not getting caught.
I was just thinking.
I just have, like, these internal battles in my head. Like, it's this person. No, it's not.
I feel like the poor family, like.
That poor family. They literally said this woman was the glue that holds their family together. She was taking care of everyone.
Also, you, they know that the police are wrong. That's when I feel really bad, is when the family, obviously they know her character, they know her life, they know her a lot better than, you know, a random cop coming into the house. And the fact that they were telling these people it's not an option. Look again, keep looking. And they just were like, nope, sorry, bye.
And that's like one of my huge pet peeves when it comes to police, is when police come to parents or family members in a case and try to tell you what your child or sibling is like. They do that a lot of times with like missing children's cases. They're like, oh, she ran away. Like, you don't know my child. You need to listen to the people that know this person when you're working on this case.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, oh no, you dug a little too deep and it ended up being a suicide. But guess what? There aren't killers walking around free. Or, oh my God, the kid really did run away. At least you fucking found them. Who cares if you're wrong? But like, just do it. Just do it.
Yeah, it should matter more about, you know, the person who's either missing or deceased or whatever. They should care more about that than being right. Or, you know, we don't want this. I feel like a lot of it is like, we don't have the time or resources to just continue this search. Or it pissed me right off. Me right off. Now I'm all pissed off.
I'm with you, girl. I am with you. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this little episode. Your homework for tonight is to go do some digging and think of a theory and leave a comment on our Instagram or DM us and tell us what your theory is, because I want to know.
Yeah, I do want to know too. And I just wanted to shout out the people that have been listening to us on YouTube. We randomly have gotten a lot of views on our YouTube videos recently, probably because we've been posting more. But just want to shout out the YouTuber peoples and just thank you again. We're over 24,000 downloads at this point. You guys are just crushing it.
And before you guys get too excited, no, these YouTube videos are not live videos. They're literally just the episodes over our logo. Apologies. But trust me, you don't want to see us. Like, the second we got on this call, I was like, I'm sorry, Allison. Like, this is a hair wash day. Don't look at me. I literally look like I put olive oil on my scalp.
It's not that bad. But I also I'm always looking a hot mess. So if you guys really do want to see us, you just trust us. You don't. We're telling you that you are wrong.
I do want to venture onto TikTok, but I'm scared.
I am too. Let us know what you guys think about us going on TikTok. I do feel like it would be good for us.
But I feel like it's the best way to get yourself out there these days, but I also feel like we would get eaten alive.
Alive. I'm so sensitive these days. The hormones.
Yeah. I'm just sensitive.
The hormones.
So yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. We love you, we appreciate you, we are so grateful for you, and we are gonna start getting into some spookier cases now that it's spooky season.
Yeah, I think my next one that I'm doing is a bit spooky.
Tis the season.
I know, I found it the other day and I was like, ooh, is it too early? Never too early.
Never. No, it's okay.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to follow, like, subscribe on literally everything. It's just at Crime on Caffeine. Instagram is probably the best way to get in touch with us. You can just DM us.
And quick shout out to our listeners in Vietnam. We're charting there on Apple Podcasts. So
shout out
to our listeners over there. That's awesome.
Yeah, we obviously don't speak Vietnamese, but really happy that you're still just with us in this journey. That's incredible. Forgot about that. That was, you guys shock me every day. I feel really cool.
So awesome.
I feel really cool when like any country is like, we're trending in it. I'm like, remember Slovenia?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, Slovenia was for a little bit. We even had Canada for a second. That was big.
That was big because I love Canada. Yes. But yeah, thank you guys so much. We won't keep you any longer. So We'll catch you on the next one.